On tonight's show, we got another Know Your Enemy Game of the Week. This time, it's Memphis and ULM. Speaking of the Game of the Week, I've got some stats from last week's game that I think are going to blow your mind. And Colin, you got something.
Man, we are not getting paid.
No, we aren't.
And college athletes are about to be paid.
What?
Yeah, roll it. On the show tonight, we've got...
Every night was a battle.
You can lock this in, take it to the bank.
No class at all. It's unbelievable.
They should see a relatively quick turnaround.
Show me the money.
Big water splash, snow cone truck and everything.
One team stands alone.
Well, you know what I think about Troy.
I'm losing my mind over here.
We've got the moment you've all been waiting for.
Of course.
Welcome into the show. Let me tell you something. You can pay us if you want to. I don't want to discourage anyone from
paying us
by simply hitting that subscribe button, right?
Right.
Yep. We're the Bench Boys. I'm Colin Cahill.
I'm Thomas Gleaton.
And this is our show. If you're listening to us on any podcast platform, by all means, just hit the subscribe button. Then you get all of our updates. It's great. We're on like everything now. We've gone over it like every week, but just in case, we're on everything. Follow us on Twitter and all that stuff. You get all the cool things. Thomas did a sweet 8-bit graphic this week.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
that. I like the little love of our game of the week, which is between Memphis and ULM. So, but we will get into that a little later. But for right now, let's get out the gate.
Out of the gate.
So last week we had some pretty great games. Last week, our game of the week was Louisiana at Georgia Southern. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, let's talk about the other outcomes that we had. We had App State just kind of steamrolling Coastal Carolina. And we had Texas State beating Nicholls 24-6.
They got the paddle.
They did. They got the paddle back.
Yeah, they did.
Finally. It took them, what, 8 years?
It showed up, which was very shocking.
Right.
Like, there was actually – the paddle made the trip, which was – shocking.
Right. And then Texas State was like, yeah, that's right. It's ours. Mm-hmm. ULM, our team for the game of the week, beat South Alabama 30-17. We'll have more of that later in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But first, let's really hit on, I think, probably the most, I don't know how to put it, Troy, Arkansas State. Let's go ahead and get into it real quick.
Troy way to lose a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, We've tried our best to be, and we will continue to try to be as unbiased as possible. But as Troy alums, I think it's our, even as unbiased podcasters.
Viewers, yeah.
I think it's our job to talk about the Troy-Arkansas State game. A ton of offense.
Ton.
That's the second time this season that Troy's had a ton of offense in a game.
And lost.
We talked about Lane Hatcher last week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he did not lose a step.
Boy,
he did not need to learn anything.
Boy, did he surprise me.
Yeah.
I was very, very surprised. I mean, the kid, you know, he had all the accolades coming out of Arkansas and, you know, he had like state records. I mean, he had so much stuff coming out of high school. And you go to Alabama for a reason on that. I know he was a late commit to Alabama, but obviously Alabama saw something with him.
Right.
And I think he played very well, but I also think, I just don't think Troy's defense is that good. Me and you talked about it on Twitter. I don't think their defense is that good. I think their run defense is behind a curtain right now that, okay, they've only allowed how many yards of rushing?
However many it was.
It's like either right below 100 or at 100, but I don't believe that. They have played four teams that, okay, didn't need to run the ball. They haven't played a team yet like a Georgia Southern. They haven't played a team yet like a Coastal Carolina. They haven't played a team yet like App State that is going to run the ball for 200 yards and is going to be dedicated to running the ball. I don't think they're there at all this year. And I think our run defense, everybody's like, oh, we still got to, no. I don't see it. I really don't. I don't see, other than Carlton Marshall on that defense, I don't see anybody that was from the defense that we've seen, especially in the run game. I don't see any nastiness on that defense at all. I see a lot of young guys all over the place, and a redshirt freshman in Lane Hatcher just threw all over them. There was no pressure on him. Yeah, he threw two interceptions, but he's a redshirt freshman. He's going to make those mistakes. Two interceptions, that's great and all. You get two interceptions off him, but then you're still going to let him throw for 440 yards? Like, it's just, and I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but this Troy team, they're down, man. They're fourth, fifth team, best team in the conference as a whole right now. And the only reason why they're four is because their offense is as dynamic and as powerful as what it is right now.
And we went over that because we posted our power rankings this week, where we both pretty much said the top four were the same at Louisiana, Arkansas State, Troy. Pretty clear cut there. But I hesitate to disagree with you because I agree with a lot of the things that you're saying. I've seen incremental growth in that defense, because two interceptions is more than Troy has had all year prior to that point. Mm-hmm. And the offense, that defensive line, that core put more pressure on Lane Hatcher than it put on Jack Abraham, than it put on Cato Nelson. It's incremental. I've seen it get better, but it hasn't gotten much better. So in the end, I'm eventually circling my way back around to agree with you. This pass defense is just, I called it a windsock in my article today for the Trojan Wall.
That's
like,
all right.
I mean, I hate disparaging my alma mater, but the facts are the facts. And I think it's about time we had a discussion about this defense. Mm-hmm. That for the past 3 years was without a doubt the best in the conference. I hear you, App State fans. I was hesitant to say without a doubt.
I think 1A, 1B. That's what I really honestly think, yeah, of the, yeah, last 3 years.
App State and Troy's defenses were, yeah, tops in the conference, yeah, for the past 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I picked Troy just because the numbers were better. And it's not the same.
Mm-mm.
That's not the same defense that Troy's had.
No.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't at least acknowledge the fact that now Troy's defense is in such a rut. Moving on, I think we kind of jumped the gun a little bit, though.
Yeah.
Let's get into our Hustle Awards for the week, because I think we already touched on yours, didn't we?
You go with yours first.
Okay, well, yeah, then I'm assuming, and that's, yeah, bad, and we know what that means.
Okay.
My Hustle Award goes to a guy that you've given the Hustle Award to in previous weeks, but I'm going to give it to him for a different reason. Darrington Evans had 132 kick return yards against Coastal Carolina. That's some, again, to go back to Troy, that's some Marcus Jones level numbers right there. But the reason I'm giving him the belt is because, or excuse me, the award is because his numbers right now are the most kick return and punt return combined in a single game for the conference. No one else has returned for that many yards on a kickoff or a punt put together in a single game, in one game. He made more return yards on a kick return than anyone else did on a kick and punt put together.
Well, I mean, I remember we talked to Joe Cashion about this, and I mean, he was specifically talking about Marcus Jones.
Right.
Clearly something's up with the Coastal Carolina special teams, because,
yeah,
they have a history of just not being very good. And it's still there, obviously, with Mr. Evans doing 134 yards or 132 or however many he had. Yeah, that doesn't add up.
But, you know, for one guy to do that, I think if we had this award out last year or the year before, probably would have given it to Marcus Jones just because of how dynamic he was against their return. So I'm going to give it to Darrington Evans. Do the due diligence here. That's some special teams madness right there. And I think any kicker listening right now, which is all of zero of them, do not kick it to Darrington Evans. Just don't. Why would you? Stop. Don't think about it.
Had some other stuff that you want to talk about too.
I did, but I was going to let you get your Hustle Award person in.
I mean, you keep going, because I have like two, and I'm still trying to depict which, even as this episode is recording, I'm still trying to.
Okay. It. No. Hey, and you were back and forth on this before we went on air. So, I mean, it's not a big deal. So here's where we're at. Last week's game of the week was pretty great up until the fourth quarter. Louisiana, Georgia Southern, Louisiana ended up winning 37 to, was it 37-24 or 37-24. Mm-hmm. this game had some incredible stats that I went back and looked at this week, and I'm just a little blown away by it. But like, on the other hand, there are also stats that we shouldn't be surprised by. So let's just go ahead and get into it real quick. Georgia Southern, definitely a triple option team, a running team, do not do much passing. So it's not really a surprise to see that, oh, hey, they had the number two lowest number of pass attempts by any team in one game for the entire conference this year. Well, the number one team is Louisiana in that same game. Louisiana had 12 pass attempts in the game. Southern had 18. Combined, those teams had 30 pass attempts in this entire game. Put that into perspective, going back to Troy and Lane Hatcher and Jack Abraham and Caleb Barker, each of those guys threw for more pass attempts in each of those individual games by themselves than both of these teams put together through.
Wow.
In one game.
Wow.
Like, just imagine the smash level of smash mouth that is right there. It gets better. Louisiana's longest pass on the entire game was 9 yards. I bring all this up. Wow. That was a weird laugh. I bring all this up because last week, what did I say the X factor was in this game? Last week, what did I say? It was Levi Lewis can throw the ball. That's going to make the difference.
Yeah.
Suffice to say, I missed the mark on that one just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So real quick, a couple of other stats that stood out to me. Georgia Southern is the only team so far this season to convert a two-point conversion successfully this season in the Sun Belt. And Tyler Bass, the kicker for Georgia Southern, went 3 for 3. He kicked 4 field goals in a previous game. Mm-hmm. So he has both the number one and tied for number two most made field goals in a game this year. So
good for him.
Talk about good special teams to offset Coastal Carolina's woes. Georgia Southern has a kicker that will absolutely make the mark.
Yeah.
So a bunch of, obviously, a very, very run-heavy
interesting
game.
Yeah.
And it ended up 37-24.
Well, I think we talked about, too, Georgia Southern had to outrush Louisiana, and that didn't happen.
Right.
Louisiana had, like, what, 275 on the ground again? I mean,
yeah, something like that.
That is just a potent running attack. Like, when you can pick up 275, and they're running out of the gun most of the time. Like,
yeah.
That's scary.
Louisiana is not supposed to be the run team in this situation. And Louisiana was looking more like Georgia Southern last year than Georgia Southern was looking.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a reason they're the number two team in our power rankings this week.
Yeah, yeah, they hopped up to number two. Good stats. I finally figured out who I wanted for my guy. I was trying to figure out. I had to go just to make sure I didn't want to. Everybody pretty happy. All the wide receivers in the Sun Belt, the exception of all the wide receivers in basically Arkansas State and Troy's game, nobody had over 100 yards.
Of course.
But at all. Troy's game, I think, had like 4 wide receivers had over 100
Again,
yards
yeah,
just
it's
in that game.
It's the second time in the season. It's the only time it's happened
insane
to Troy.
But the guy who just had a career day was Omar Bayless. And we talked about him, how dangerous of a wideout he was. I remember saying they still have the wide receiver corps to do what ended up happening. And I didn't have all the faith in Lane Hatcher because I didn't really see much film on him. But let me tell you something. Omar Bayless, 689 yards receiving on the season on 36 receptions. Yeah.
That's some good numbers there.
That is almost 20 yards of reception. That is a little over 19 yards of reception, which is insane. 7 touchdowns. He went 10 receptions for 213 yards and opened up the game with a 92-yard reception. The guy one-on-one, that is Ark State. That's their power right there in their entire offense is they have 3 wide receivers that can go one-on-one and most likely are going to beat every cornerback in this league. Before I get too far, Troy's – we've talked about their secondary. Troy's just got a bad secondary, but – I still think Ark State's wide receivers are just that good. And I think Omar Bayless is probably going to be – he is in the running right now, I think, for player of the year just because of these numbers he's putting up. I mean, gaudy numbers. You're averaging almost 20 yards of reception. That's insane. He's my hustle award easy. Lane – close second.
He was a player of the week this week for the conference.
Yeah.
And deserved it. He was my hustle award winner back in week one because he caught 5 touchdowns in a game against SMU. And we'll get to SMU in a bit. That is an incredible. No, wait. Was it SMU? No.
No, it wasn't SMU.
Yeah. My bad, y'all. My bad. The point was, he caught for 5 touchdowns in a game on his own self. Omar Bayless monster.
It was SMU. It was 4 touchdowns.
Okay.
4 touchdowns.
So I had something wrong.
Yeah.
But SMU's a pretty good team. He caught for 4 touchdowns, a school record by himself. This man is a monster, and I agree with you. Offensive player of the year, he's right now in, October 2nd?
Yeah. With the exception of Georgia, he has had 130 yards receiving in every game.
And I remember telling you on Twitter, you got to take the Georgia game out when you're talking about
He had 54 against Georgia. He still averaged 8 yards of reception. But this is the surprising stat. All last year, I'm not sure if he got hurt last year. Don't quote me on this. He only had 39 receptions last year for 566 yards. The year before that, he had 32 receptions for 439 yards. This year alone, he has 36 receptions, and we're 4 games into the season.
And he's already meeting the goal for a year.
5 games into the season for Ark State, my bad. So, yeah, he's almost topped what he's done last year. I mean, he's having an incredible year. He's a great player. I mean, Ark State, that's probably the best wide receiving corp. I think Troy's still right up there, but Ark State's, I think, got him. You know, kind of a 1-2 type deal. So, but that's my hustle award for the week.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into it then. We talked about ULM. Memphis is our game of the week. So it's time to know your enemy.
Know your enemy.
In this week's game, we've obviously got ULM and Memphis. ULM coming in 2-2 with wins over Grambling and South Alabama. A really close loss to Florida State. And just a bad blowout loss to Iowa State, where things just kind of got out of hand late.
They've really been all over the map this year with the scores and with the performance. And we talked about it last week, I think, with Caleb Evans has got to step up. Well, one of the last few weeks, we talked about Caleb Evans has got to step up. He's a junior or senior now. He's a senior now.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to be the guy that he's meant to be. He's got to be the quarterback for ULM and step up and lead this team. I haven't looked at his stats yet, but
he had a decent game last week. He threw for 286 yards. I mean, that was more of the Caleb Evans that we kind of thought we'd see a lot this year. Just a guy who was going to average closer to 300 yards a game, at least total yards a game, and he really hasn't been doing that. I mean, I'm looking at the last 4 games: 286, 176, 241, 183. I mean, just. Those aren't the numbers that you're expecting to see out of him. And even running the ball, I mean, he ran the ball for 93 yards against Iowa State. That's solid. That's what you expect him to get. You expect him to get 70 to 80 yards, I think, rushing a game just because of how dynamic he is. But all the other games, it's just not there. You know, 27 yards last week. Now, running, so he's 286 to the ground, 286 on the air, 27 on the ground.
That's 313.
Yeah, I mean, that's 300. That's not bad, but that's what you kind of you're expecting 300, 350 a game. You know, that 275 mark, and I think it's because he doesn't have a guy like Marcus Jones,
Marcus Green can
bail him out. That is a guy that you can just pitch it to him, and Marcus Green was going to make plays. I mean, that's just how good a wide receiver he was.
Adding insult to injury, this week it doesn't get any easier for them because they're literally taking a huge step down from, let's see, 6 to 42 with Memphis. Obviously joking about the score there between Memphis and South. This isn't a cakewalk by any means for ULM.
No, Memphis is, in my opinion... I mean, it's Boise State, it's Memphis. That's the order. And I mean, UCF, big talk.
Kind of took a step down with the loss. I mean, they're still there, but it's...
Memphis right now has the schedule, though, that... I mean, Boise State obviously has the road win against Florida State. Memphis has the road win, or it might have been at home, against Ole Miss. I mean, yeah, I know Ole Miss is Ole Miss, but that's still a SEC win. That's a good-looking win. I think by the end of the year, that's going to be a factor, that they have a win over an SEC school. So, but they are talented. They are big on both sides. We talked with Doug Conkle about when they came down here to Mobile, and they finally have in the trenches the big men that they really have lacked in the past years. So that's what makes them dangerous. And again, they got over the hump last week, which was Navy. So that was the big thing. So first up, we've got Jeff Brightwell.
Oh, damn it. Okay. Cut it. Blah, 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 blah. 3, 2, 1. Jeff Brightwell with University of Memphis Athletics, Memphis University.
He's their broadcaster.
He's a broadcast guy. Let's go ahead and bring him in.
And now we're here with Jeff Brightwell, a Memphis alum, 1996, if I'm correct, Jeff. A Memphis alum. First of all, thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be on it.
Well, Jeff, you know, we've personally haven't seen Memphis play, but we've obviously had them earlier on the show or in the season. Obviously high powered offense. What have you kind of seen in the first, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of this Memphis team that has kind of, is there anything different about this Memphis team in the years past?
I think the defense it's been a nice surprise this year. We've kind of been young, plugging holes the last couple of years, but Adam Fuller, the new defensive coordinator, is, you got to put in a little bit of wrinkle. They're a little bit more aggressive, more, you know, team focused. So the defense has been a real pleasant surprise this season. I think it'll help out. Of course, we still have a pretty solid offense this year. We're going to be able to score points in the ball games. We've put up 35 against Navy, 42 against South Al, Southern 55. Ole Miss had it, held us down to 15. But the defense, and that's what we noticed in the Ole Miss game, is wow, this defense is much improved. And if you're going to come out of that group of five and try to make a run at, you know, one of those New Year's Day bowls or win a conference championship, you've got to have both sides of the ball.
Obviously, that first week playing Ole Miss, I mean, you guys get the SEC win. What does that do? I mean, do you guys put a lot of weight into that win, you know, now in week five?
I think we would have put more weight into it in years past, and that's no disrespect to Ole Miss. They're 45 minutes away. We've had a little thing with them in the past, and one of their players had called us a little brother about a month before the game, so we played big on that. It was always nice to beat Ole Miss, but it was kind of strange because, you know, in 2015 when we beat Ole Miss and they were nationally ranked and we beat them on ABC, and that was when Justin Puente was here, and that kind of really got Memphis back on the map after we had, you know, we had kind of been down for about 5 or 6 years, really down in a span where we went 3-20, I think 3-21 over 2 years, and Justin Puente got us back. That was the big win that vaulted us into the first ever college football playoff poll the first year they had it. But this is one of the first years we've ever been favored to win that Ole Miss game. So you didn't come out of that game, you know, rushing the field, tearing down goalposts. It was an expected win. And it's a little bit different than in years past. So there wasn't the euphoria of beating an SEC team like there would be sometimes. So it was an expected win. I think the big win for us this year is, as we talked about before we went on air, is getting over that hump over Navy. We'd only beaten them once since they've been in the conference, and that's been just a tough game for everybody because they're the outlier. They're the only team that plays that triple option in the league.
Yeah, I mean, that I was about to jump into that. I mean, was it the triple option that just gave you fits? What was it about Navy that it just seemed that Memphis could just never get over that hump with Navy?
You know, the difficult thing is when you play Navy, and maybe every other triple option team, is you can score fast on them, but that's really not what you want because you're not really giving your defense a break. Coach Norvell went into that game and talked about the game we had last year where we only had one possession in the first quarter. We scored on it. One possession in the third quarter. We scored on it. But then you're hanging your defense out to dry because Navy eats up the clock. And what happened last week at the Liberty Bowl? We score on the first play from scrimmage, 75 yards to answer back a Navy score. So it takes 12 seconds off the clock. They go up 20-7. We return a kickoff for 99 yards. So no time's taken off the clock. And sure enough, it's a one possession game, but we only have 7 minutes of possession time at the half. They were able to make some adjustments, you know, kind of anchor down a little bit in the second half, and we ended up winning by two possessions, a nice 12-point win over Navy. But, man, when you play that team, you know, and their drives are eating up 7-8 minutes on a regular basis, you want to score. You're not going to turn down the scores, but, well, you'd like to have some possession time.
You know, and let's get to this week. This, you know, you get the big win over Navy. You have ULM this week, but then you kind of have a sneaky good Temple team that a lot of national pundits say Temple that's a sneaky good team. So how does, you know, is this a trap game with a ULM team that comes in, you know, they won last weekend, but getting blown out by an Iowa State squad 2 weeks ago. Is this kind of a trap game for Memphis that maybe they're overlooking a game like this?
Well, I think the fans could say that. I don't think the players and the coaches, especially the juniors and the seniors, because they are all playing 2 years ago when we played Monroe up in Memphis. Remember, that was the season opener that season. That was a one-possession ball game. That was – I forgot which hurricane was coming through, but they nearly canceled that game. I remember being at the Liberty Bowl. That was the night game. I was probably there around 2 or 3 that afternoon. That was one of the few games when security came up to the press box and made everyone, you know, you have to get out of the press box right now. We played in a deluge of rain the entire ball game. We're able to beat a very physical Monroe ball club. So I don't think the players, and I know Mike Norvell's not looking past it, but you mentioned Temple the next week. Yeah, they're sneaky good. If they didn't stumble against Buffalo, they might be top 25. They actually might be ahead of us in the rankings right now.
You know, and getting into some players here, you guys lose Daryl Henderson from last year, obviously a great running back. You know, was there a guy in waiting? I'm looking at some stats here. You know, Kenny Gainwell or last name of Gainwell?
Yeah.
Was he kind of expected to?
Yeah, it was Kenny last year. He wanted to go by Kenneth this year. It was one of those name changes. But yeah, it was Kenny Gainwell. Actually, it was going to be Patrick Taylor, who had his ankle or his foot rolled up on him against Ole Miss. So that's why Patrick Taylor's only played the one game. He had a chance to go in the draft last year. And, you know, the players now can talk to the draft analysts. Mm-hmm. And they had told him, you know, you can probably go as high as the fifth round, but he wanted to come back and be the guy since, you know, he didn't sit last year. He played behind Henderson and Tony Pollard, who's with the Cowboys, but he wanted to be the feature, the guy, and unfortunately for him, he picked up that injury. Won't play in the game this week against Monroe. Hopefully he can come back against Temple, but Kenneth Gainwell, your redshirt freshman. Coach Norvell played him in the 4 games you could play without pulling off a redshirt a season ago, and he's told us for a year and a half, he thinks this guy can be extremely special, and he showed it so far this year, getting nearly 103 yards a game, 4 touchdowns. He's really high on Kylan Watkins, the other freshman as well. What the Tigers will do is they'll mix that run and they'll spread it around. They'll have 4 or 5 receivers they can get it to.
You know, and ULM kind of their offense for me and Thomas here. You know, I think they've underperformed, but they still have a guy named Caleb Evans at quarterback.
Yeah.
What have you kind of seen that – is there anything that worries you with a guy like Caleb Evans running offense for ULM?
Well, we talk about the Memphis offense that can put up some points. Monroe's put up over 31 points a game so far. They've been fairly balanced, 232, what, in the air, a little over 210 on the ground. And you get a quarterback like that can throw in the run, it's kind of an X factor. You can plan for those guys, but, you know, you can get into the pocket. Once you break that pocket, though, he's going to be very dangerous on his feet. The strength of Memphis, though, fortunately, is that defensive line. You've got some veterans and Huff and Goodson and Wilson and Dorsius that can make some noise up there. It's going to be dependent on them to get the early pressure and our D-backs to cover the receivers. That way it kind of limits his options.
You know, what are the – I guess, you know, waking up Sunday, it says Memphis knocks off ULM. What are the – if you can, in 3 points, what are those 3 points that Memphis has to, or 3 things that Memphis has to do this weekend to get the W?
The run game on both sides of the ball. Kenneth needs to be solid between him and Watkins, protect Brady White, that defensive front that I just told you about. And I think the X factor, if I was going to say there's an X factor in the game, is the Tiger special teams have been outstanding this year. And actually the last couple of years, 9 kickoff returns for touchdowns in the last 4 years. Had another one against Navy the other day. We've blocked a couple of punts this year. The defensive coverage has been really well. Pete Limbo's the new special team coach. He's picked up where the other coordinators have left off once they have left Memphis. So I think special teams will be the big difference maker in this ballgame because I think they can play on both sides of the ball, offense and defense, but I think Memphis has a little edge on special teams.
Definitely, definitely. Well, thank you so much, Jeff Brightwell, broadcaster with the Memphis University Fighting Tigers. I don't know. They'll have some fight this weekend, I guess.
The Tigers.
Yeah, the Tigers. But once again, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight, and good luck this weekend.
Thanks for having us, guys.
You know, I think Memphis there's a lot of weight on them right now. I mean, that Navy game, that was the game that everybody's like, we just got to win this game. Well, you won this game. Now guess what? You got 8 more games you got to go win, and you're still 4-0, and you're probably in the toughest. I mean, easily the toughest conference right now in the group of 5 conferences.
No doubt.
With just who's all in that conference.
No doubt.
They have a lot left, but this is that sneaky trap game that I think they could stumble. I mean, they've got a really good Temple team that they're going to play next week, and. What Jeff was talking about, how, you know, they have, this isn't a conference, this is an out of conference game. Like, they need to go and play smart in this game, focus on this game, but they've got 7 more games after this. So, we will see. But I like what Jeff said, that they aren't going to overlook this ULM team.
Well, let's move on to our next guest then, shall we?
And now we're joined by Nick White, the play-by-play voice for the ULM Warhawks. Nick, first of all, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
I appreciate it, guys. Any chance to promote our football team and our athletes, I'm certainly glad to do it. Thank you for the invite.
Well, first, you know, just give us a quick, you know, synopsis. You know, we're 4 weeks in, or ULM is 4 games in. We're 5 weeks into the season. What have you kind of seen out of ULM for those first 4 games? It's kind of been an up and down early on with a really good game against Florida State, and then kind of backpedaled against Iowa State. What have you seen out of their play so far this season?
Well, obviously, handled your business, it's scrambling like you should. And we really played that game in week 1 really close to the vest. They didn't really show a lot. And I will say, going into week 2, I felt really good about the matchup with Florida State. And I'm really good. Like, I really did think we'd go down there and compete and win. Obviously, we held up that end of the bargain there until the very end. And, that game, guys, as far as, just doing what I do, it was the highest of highs because we made a furious comeback. And, you're sitting there and our producer back at our home flagship is saying, hey, we're getting calls from Bristol, Connecticut, and Los Angeles, and New York, and Dan Patrick show and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, make sure they're patched in, because what they wanted is, if we came up with a, great ending, they were going to play our calls all over, nationwide. So that would have been pretty cool. And then to miss an extra point like that, I know a lot of people said, should have went for 2. Coach Viator had great logic as to why he kicked it, wanted to kick it, because he felt like we were in control of the game and we're going to win it. Mm-hmm. And didn't expect that to happen. So we were obviously so disappointed. We're not into moral victories anymore. Previous staff might have been. So there was a lot of disappointment. And then got back on track last week against South Alabama. Got a nice win, like we were hoping to start off 1-0 in league play. And now the game that everybody in our area has been circling, this Memphis game, which, with them being ranked number 23, will be the first ranked opponent in the FBS era to play against the Warhawks in Malone Stadium. So, our area is really excited about it. I'm really excited about it. I got to see them 2 years ago to open up the season, and I've watched them a couple of times this year. And this is an awfully good Memphis team that's coming in here Saturday afternoon.
You know, in these first 4 games, what have you seen? We talked a little bit earlier. Caleb Evans has had, I feel like, his expectations coming into the season were just through the roof with just how he's played over the last, year, 2 years. What have you kind of seen in a maturation process and in a progression of his game over these first 4 games?
Well, I think you're seeing him make better decisions. His interception numbers went way up last year, and and in his own words, he regressed actually last year because of the turnovers, some costly picks, and some major games. A pick in the end zone against Lafayette. That obviously that's a 3-point ball game that we lost in that one. And You know, some other big time interceptions there, bad decisions by his own admittance. And so they worked with him all season about making the right decisions, making the safer plays, and they wanted to really ramp up the run game, which they have. And so with that, and he's a big part of the run game. I mean, he's arguably, you know, not arguably, he's the best dual threat quarterback in the Sun Belt by far. He was second team, you know, preseason all conference. He can throw the ball too. And, you know, the biggest thing with Caleb that's helped him out is, I think because, you know, we lost Marcus Green, who was the only player drafted out of the Sun Belt last year, wide receiver, and then R.J. Turner, who was our number two receiver, was a graduate transfer. He went to Texas Tech. So you lose your top two receivers, and it's really helped Caleb make sound decisions both through the air and running the football with the RPO offense. And you're just seeing a senior doing what a senior should do and making the right decisions, making the right reads, getting his targets, and really leading this football team by example.
You guys have got a really solid Memphis program coming in here. I mean, some people are pegging them. You know, they are probably 1-1A to Boise State when it comes to, you know, New Year's Day Six Bowl represented from the G5. How does ULM kind of approach a game like this? Obviously, you were talking about this is the first time a ranked team's come to La Monroe in a while, and if ever. And how do the Warhawks kind of go into a game like this against such a quality opponent?
Well, major respect for them. Number one, you know, we opened up the year up there in 2017 on a Thursday night. Actually played, and at the time it was Tropical Storm Harvey up there, and probably the only reason that game wasn't postponed because it was televised on CBS Sports Network. And I mean, it was, and we lost by 8 in that ballgame. Dug ourselves in a 30-7 hole, fought our way back, and had a chance with an onside kick with about a minute left. He couldn't recover it, and so fell in that ballgame. But a lot of our guys played in that ballgame. They were, you know, either freshmen or sophomores then, and now they're juniors and seniors. But I think Memphis, everybody thinks about their offense, but their defense is unbelievable, guys. I mean, look at their numbers. They're not giving up over 300 yards per game through four games. That's impressive. And they're barely giving up over 100 yards through the air. You know, you ask about my thought on it. Memphis is the best team we're going to play this year, aside from maybe Appalachian State, which I think should be in that conversation of what you're talking about in New Year's Six as well. Mm-hmm. And we'll see them in a couple of weeks up in Boone. But this is an awfully good football team in Memphis. They have our respect. And, I think that you know, we also are respected by Memphis and their fans as well because of what we were able to do up there 2 years ago.
You know, I'm looking at some stats for you guys, and your defense is giving up 500 yards. Is that an area of concern when you come in, when you've got an offense like what Memphis has? What does the defense have to do? Is it contained? I mean, what does the defense have to do this week to kind of contain an offense like Memphis?
Yeah, probably the biggest thing, and you know, once again, some of those numbers, you know, Cam Akers, one of the best backs at Florida State, he had a really good game. That game went to overtime, so he got some extra yardage in there. Once again, you know, probably with just the twos out there, Iowa State got about 250 yards extra total offense in that football game there. And, you know, South Alabama came out last week, had two really good opening drives because they came out in 22 personnel, two tight ends, two running backs, which they had only shown 14 plays in the prior four games all year. So it took a little bit of adjustment for our defense, and once they did adjust, they were shut down. But certainly, the defense has had its struggle points. And you ask, what do they need to do better? They need to tackle better. I mean, that's been one of the biggest issues, in particular last week against a really good running back in Trey Minter at South Alabama, was missed tackles. And they've worked on that, and they want to get better at that, obviously. The second thing they really got to get better at is silly penalties and you know, extracurricular penalties, the 15-yard, the big boy penalties. They've got to cut that out. They had too many of those last week. Coach Viator told us that they addressed that significantly this past Sunday. We had a few of them against Iowa State as well that can prove to be costly. And so, you know, to beat Memphis, you got to cut all that stuff out to really have a legitimate shot to be able to beat these guys.
Perfect, perfect. Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Obviously, we're lucky to have people come onto our show, and definitely we like learning a lot about our conference teams here in the Sun Belt. So, good luck for this weekend. Hopefully, Sun Belt can knock a pretty good group of five team off this weekend.
That would be great. We certainly hope that. Hopefully, you say we knock off two in the span of about 2 weeks. Going up to App State in a few weeks as well, but that's going to be quite a challenge. They are really, really good. Thanks, guys, for the invite.
So, wrapping up what he said, but I'm also going to wrap it in with what Jeff said. Both of them at the end, both of them talked about special teams. And that's what I really like hearing, is that both of them know the importance of special teams with each of these two teams. And we heard it with how well the ULM kicker needs to play this week. Don't miss an extra point. Make your field goals. That's going to keep ULM in the ballgame. It's going to be a really tough game for ULM. But don't make – if you've got a 20-yard field goal, don't miss it. If you've got an extra point, don't miss it. Don't keep points off the scoreboard. That's not going to help you against a team where you're going to need every single point you can get against Memphis.
And that's what's – and honestly, it goes the other way, because Jeff said this is a fragile thing. You talk to anybody who's been a coach, I'm sure Neil will tell you, I'm sure Scott Satterfield will tell you, having that team up at a high level like that in a group of five, the success is fleeting, and one little thing can bring you down just because of the way the Sun Belt and the group of five work. So I'm glad that you're right. The special teams is going to play a big factor. Every little detail is going to become a big factor. And I think that, I just forgot where I was going to go. But the point is, there's so much on either side. There's pressure to win on Memphis, and there's pressure to meet expectations on ULM side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a good game. So hopefully we will see who comes out on top here. But right now, let's just jump right into where we got to be with some best bets.
Best bets.
So our fan vote real quick. It is not kind to ULM. It's pretty... I think this might be the first time we've had a 100 for... No, it's the second time. The last time we had 100 was Nebraska at South Alabama. So, I mean, it's not unprecedented, but, you know, things aren't looking great for ULM in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-mm. No, I want Caleb Evans. If Caleb Evans can get to that 350 plateau in this game, I think that would be a great game for him against a really good Memphis defense. Problem is, I don't think 350 yards is going to be enough. Like, I think he's going to have a career game, like, in order for ULM to win this ball game, because ULM's defense just isn't there. They're giving up 499 yards of total, basically 500 yards of total offense. And it's not like we're giving up, like Troy's defense, where they're giving up 320 in the air and only 100 on the ground. It is bad on both sides. It's 250 and 248 on run or pass and run, respectively. And when you have an offense like Memphis, that when I watched them play Navy and when we watched them play South, they spread you out. I mean, their wide receivers aren't on the hashes. Their wide receivers are off at the sidelines. And that's what kind of Baylor, I don't know if you ever watched Baylor back in the day when Art Briles was there. That is an Art Briles type of move right there, where he makes one-on-ones happen with linebackers and running backs. And that's what they do. Kenny Gainwell, he's only a redshirt freshman, but he's proven that. You're watching the film against Navy. They hit huge plays against Navy. And it's because it was one-on-ones with linebackers and running backs in open field, and there was nobody around them. And Memphis just has so many athletes on their team. Brady White is having a very good year. 66 of 90 passing in the first four games. I mean, that's meticulous. He's got two interceptions, but still, that's a game manager type of guy, which is what Memphis really wanted him to be this year. I just think it's just too much Memphis. I don't think Memphis is overlooking this game. I think it's just too much offense, and I don't think ULM has the defense to stop Memphis. And the spread is 14.5. I'm gonna take that. I think Memphis covers 14.5. I think this game kind of gets ugly
and
quick.
I agree with you. I think we're both on the same page here with Memphis, but it just it looked like a prettier matchup at the beginning of the season, not to lie at you.
Oh, it really did.
But the Nick said, just look at their numbers. Just look at their numbers. It's probably the best opponent that ULM has faced all year. Yeah. And honestly, outside of App State, it might be the best Group of Five team to play another Sun Belt team this season.
Yeah. Yeah, outside of, I mean, now Ark State got SMU. We heard about that, but no,
SMU is not the same level.
No, they're. But so yeah, so you're going Memphis as well.
I'm going to Memphis as well. It's an easy pick. But speaking of App State, we've got a rematch of last year's championship game in week six. Appalachian State at Louisiana, going down to Lafayette. The Mountaineers right now are fan vote Louisiana 82%. So we got some Cajuns. We're high on some Cajun heat there. You know, Louisiana is pretty scary. I mean, we showed it. I showed you this with the stats earlier this episode against Georgia Southern. That run game is that powerful. But the very same reason that I told you that they were supposed to win this week is going to be the same reason that I don't think they pull it off against App State this year. I just don't see Levi Lewis throwing that well against this App State defense. We also talked about App State's defense earlier this episode. It's still the same as what it was these past 2 years. It did not lose a step like Troy's did. And if Levi Lewis is only throwing 12 passes, then ULL is not scoring very much. And that's got to change and change quick. And just honestly, going up against an even tougher passing defense, I just don't see Louisiana getting it done. I got App State all the way.
You know, you were talking about App State and their defense. I think their defense, they look solid, but Coastal Carolina exploited their defense, I think. I mean, Coastal Carolina still scored 37 points on them. I mean, they're still allowing 420 yards worth of offense. You know, that granted, last year their defense was around the 320 mark. I mean, that's 100 yards worse, but this is where I think the difference is. Louisiana, I'm on the train right now with Billy Napier. I like, they're still averaging 314 yards a game running the ball. This is a three-headed monster at running back. They look good. The game's at Louisiana.
Okay.
So App State gets to travel there. I know this game is next week. I wish this game was on Saturday because this would have easily been our game of the week. Just like as a rematch, there's just so much stuff. What you got?
I did forget to shuffle this around. Yes. So, quick note, what we're doing, we are picking games in advance that we won't be able to get. We're not picking Georgia Southern South because it's on a Thursday that you're probably listening to. It's probably tonight.
Yeah.
By the time you're listening to this, we're going to pick the next Thursday and the next Wednesday and the next Friday games a week ahead of schedule. Sorry to derail your train of thought.
Yep.
You're still on the Louisiana train.
Yeah. I mean, last year, they didn't average 44 points a game last year. They averaged like 25 a game. This is a crazy good offense that I know the 77-point thing is kind of skewing it, but still 35, 45, 37 in their other three games this season, and 28 against a really good Mississippi State defense at the beginning of the year. And their defense is still there. I mean, 186, and look, you want to know what's surprising? Their rush defense. They're only giving up 156 yards rushing so far in this season. That is leaps and bounds different, better than what they were last year. Last year, they were at 250 a game. This year, they're 100 yards better. That's a huge improvement. That means that they've got guys on that line that are saying, you're not getting through here.
All right, two things.
Yep.
Number one, if that's such a big improvement, then how come App State's is not that big of a decrease by losing 100 yards?
Well, because App State, for the past 3 years, they've been a defense that has only given up 300 yards total a game.
Right.
That's 120 total that they're putting back.
They're giving up 400 now.
Yeah, they're giving up 400 now.
Right.
So you're saying why is 250 to 150 bigger or greater than 300 to 400?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think their defense is, I'm just going to come out and say, I don't think their defense is that good. As good as what
App
they've,
State?
Yeah, I don't think their defense is as good as what they've been in the past 3 years. That's the difference.
Okay. Number two.
Yep.
Louisiana, who is the best running back they faced this year?
Probably Kylan Hill from Mississippi State.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
How many yards did he rush for against them?
I think he was like 190 or something like that.
Yeah,
buck
he didn't even hit 200.
Yeah.
They haven't seen a rushing attack like App State's.
I know that, but App State, they're 224 game. They're 204.
That's more than a buck 90.
It is a buck 90. It's more than a buck 90. But they're only giving up 21 points a game. So that defense is still there. I mean, 25 to Ohio, 24 to Georgia Southern, 6 to Texas Southern.
That doesn't count. You know it.
I really like Billy Napier. I like what he's put out there. And okay, who's their quarterback? Lewis threw 12 times last weekend, and they still won the ball game, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
But that was against the Georgia Southern defense, not an App State defense.
I know. But I'm still riding with this three-headed monster. I think this three-headed monster is that good. I mean, Trey Regis still leads the team in rushing. And, I mean, I think the second-place guy is only like 50 yards behind him. Trey Regis got like 548 yards. I mean, they just run the ball, and they are not going to stray away from that. And I think home field advantage, I like that. And ESPN, 64% goes to UL. 36% to App.
FBI is picking Louisiana over App State.
Yes, 64. Louisiana has a 64% chance, according to FBI, to win this game.
That's a bit incredible to me, honestly. Yeah.
So there hasn't been a line yet, so I can't really do a spread yet. But I'm sure it's going to be pretty close to probably a 2.5 or 3. I'm thinking in this game. So, but no, I'm going to go with Raging Cajuns.
All right. Well, I'm not going to try to convince you. I'm just trying to defend my point.
Yeah.
I love the discussion. That's the whole reason we're here. But let's move on to something else, a little bit more fun, in my opinion. Arkansas State at Georgia State. And I noticed that is a weird way of putting that. But I circled this game before the season began. And I'm probably an idiot for doing this. And y'all can all call me an idiot on Twitter if I'm this badly wrong. But you talk about a team moving forward and looking ahead. Arkansas State's got Louisiana next week or the week after next. They got a bye week next week, and then after that it's Louisiana. You can't tell me that this Arkansas State team is not overlooking Georgia State. Georgia State has a better offense than they've had in previous years. I think Scott Watkins was right when I don't remember who it was. You, Scott, somebody said losing Penny Hart was the best thing for this offense. I agree. I think they're going to get into Hotlanta. They're going to be overlooking this Georgia State team. I think they're going to catch them unawares. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I'm going to go against the 91% that's voting for Ark State here and just lay it on the line here. Gut feeling Georgia State over Arkansas State. Probably going to get a bunch of messages on Twitter this weekend saying, you're an idiot. But that's where I'm at, and that's I'm sticking
well,
to
I mean,
it.
Well, I mean, it's not. I don't think it's that big of an ask. The spread is only 7.5. I mean, they're a touchdown favorite.
What's the FBI?
FBI, 62-37. I mean,
is that within the upset?
Oh, yeah. That's way into the upset. Yeah.
Cool.
Here's my thing. Georgia State still gives up 41 a game. Georgia State still gives up 240 in the air. Okay, Arkansas State, they're giving up 300 in the air. But, I mean, I really like Lane Hatcher. I really like Omar Bayless. I don't think Georgia State can keep up with him, to be honest with you. I don't think Dan Ellington is still even 100% yet. I think Ark State wins this game. I'll give it to you. If you call this one, that's a good call. 7.5. I think Ark State covers that. I think Ark State covers 7.5. I think they win by like 10. They just look dang good. And I know Troy's defense, we've talked about them enough this episode, but I think Lane Hatcher only gets better as the season goes on. I mean, he started out with 420. Now they're really going to roll some packages
playing
in for him.
Like that against Troy?
Yeah, I think
pretty good.
I think he gets better as the season goes
on. I put some chips on the table. Yeah. I'm going to do it. This is my upset pick for the week. I'm going to differ with you and go to Georgia State.
I like it.
All right, now let's go ahead and let's stick around. Let's move just to the west. Troy is taking on Missouri this weekend. We discussed this plenty off the air, on the air. We've been discussing this all week. Fan vote, Missouri's at 80%. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty obvious who's going with what.
Mm-hmm.
I already picked it in my article. I predicted 52-38 Missouri. I don't think people are giving Troy's offense the credit it deserves, even though that defense we've talked about is horrendous. There's a lot of offense there. This Missouri team hasn't seen this kind of offense yet. But, you know, the team is only as good as its defense.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game. I mean, just here's the thing. With what Troy's done over the past 2 years, you're like the national scene is, okay, you got to be wary of Troy. But this is here's the difference. That coaching staff's gone. And clearly that coaching staff was a big factor in what Troy did over the past two seasons. Hell, three seasons when they came up, what, 6 points short of Clemson?
Yeah.
Troy's going to hang in there, I think, for a half. I think Troy's offense keeps them in ball games. They're going to do that most of the season. But, again, you just go back to this. You go back to this defense, and now you're playing a quarterback like Kelly Bryant, who the guy threw for like 480, I think. I mean, their defense has been shutting down. Kelly Bryant, I mean, he's got over 1,000 yards. Yeah, he's thrown three interceptions. But they've really
two of those were against Wyoming.
Yeah.
And he still threw for 423 yards that game.
I mean, they've really tailored their offense to Kelly Bryant, I think.
You have to. When you get a quarterback like that, you have to.
Yeah. And they're only giving up 14 points a game.
That.
You're going to come to me.
I'm going to come to you and say,
what offense have they played that looks like Troy's offense?
The answer is none of them.
The answer is none of them. I will say you that. But they also played Neil Brown this year.
Okay.
38-7.
I'll spot you Neil Brown. I'll spot you Austin Kendall. But what else on that West Virginia team is anything like what this Troy offense is looking like right now?
Well, they got West Virginia has a guy named George Campbell who was a 5-star, like top 10 player in the country that was at Florida State that transferred to West Virginia. He did nothing in that game. They shut him down.
What have you done for me lately? Like,
yeah, they shut him down.
West Virginia, part of the reason they lost so badly is they gave up 21 points directly from turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I highlighted. I'm tooting my horn because I wrote this for the Trojan Wall, but Troy has however much, what's the percentage on FPI right there? It's probably like 15-3%, somewhere in there, between 3 and 15.
Four.
I nailed it. So Troy has a 4% chance of winning.
4.8,
that's five. We'll call it five. Troy has a 5% chance of winning.
Yep.
That's 1 in 20. If Troy wants to take advantage of that 5%, one of the things they definitely have to do is score off of turnovers. And Troy did not really do that well against Arkansas State.
Well, they didn't.
That's not completely true because there were three turnovers. Troy scored two touchdowns and then a safety.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sort of misleading when I said that. As the season as a whole, Troy has not been done well in creating turnovers.
I'm just going to be straight up. I don't think they can keep up. The spread's 25. I think they keep it in with the spread, but I just don't think they just don't have the defense. And the reason why Troy was winning the reason why Troy has won Power 5 games in the past is because they've had a defense that's kept him in the ballgame. They don't have that this year. They're just too young. They cover the spread at 25, but they don't win the game. I think Missouri wins. So,
Brett McMurphy had them covering the spread as well. So
little tidbit. Yeah. If you want to win some money, and if Troy somehow wins the whole game, money line's at $1,200 right now. So you put like $20 down, you'll win like $2,400. So
I mean, I'm not encouraging gambling in a state where the gambling is not legal, but gambling is legal in several states near the state you're sitting in. So, let's go to our out-of-conference game of the week, UCF and Cincinnati. We talked about the American Conference being a powerful, powerful conference. We talked about UCF losing a step. We talked about SMU. We talked about Memphis. We talked about Navy. We talked about we didn't talk about Tulane. We didn't talk about Houston, but we have talked about Houston. Let's talk about Cincinnati. Cincinnati's not bad. Cincinnati is a powerful American Conference team. They're still in the running to win this conference. And this is their biggest test yet, is taking on UCF to play them. The fan vote has UCF as 80. I do not think that Cincinnati will necessarily pull it off. But that doesn't mean they're not a good program. We're just talking about the American Conference being stacked.
I mean, Cincinnati's good. They had a good win over UCLA to start the season off. Here's the thing. I think UCF, I think they finally, I mean, I know they played UConn last week, but they kind of came back down to earth after the Pitt loss. They too have a quarterback. This Gabriel kid, he's a young kid. I think he's a true freshman, if maybe a redshirt freshman. Dylan Gabriel, he's out of Hawaii. I think he went to the same school as Tua Tagovailoa. He has 1,300 yards passing already on the season with 14 touchdowns. He's a lefty too, a little southpaw action. I think UCF's too good. I really do. Cincinnati, they're 4-1 on the year. Their only loss was to a really, really good Ohio State team, 42-0.
Yeah.
They handled Miami of Ohio, handled Marshall last week. But I just think UCF's got a lot of firepower. And I mean, that's as simple as that. I just think UCF has it. And
no, I agree with you. I just wanted to bring up
56-43 in FBI towards UCF.
And that's not enough for it to be in the upset. I just don't see Cincinnati pulling it off. It's entirely possible, but I don't see it.
Yeah, it's a 4-point spread towards UCF, so I'm gonna take UCF in the points too. So,
well, let's get to our next game for our final game is next week. It is ULM at Texas State. Quick turnaround for the Warhawks. They got our game of the week this week, and then they're going to Texas State out in San Marcos on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna take a punch in the jaw from Memphis, more than likely. That's what we just decided. But what do you think? Do you think they bounce back against Texas State?
I think they do. It's at San Marcos.
It's in San Marcos.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ULM on this one. I haven't done as much research as I need to do. But Texas State, they only scored 24 points against Nicholls.
Yeah,
I mean, that's still an FCS school, man. And I know you're a rebuilding process, and I know your offense is not there most times. Quick, just throw out kind of bashing somebody, but there was a site that decided to say that Texas State was going to score 52 points in this after they scored 37 points against Georgia State. It rhymes with minus D and Superdog or Underdog. Okay, whatever. It's Underdog Dynasty. They decided to predict that they were going to score 52 points in that game last week.
Yeah, that was stupid.
I tweeted out at it and I said they literally have scored 40 points four times in the last 5 years. I don't care if Spavital's there. They are not going to score 50 points. They got halfway to it. So great prediction on their part. This is the thing. Texas State just doesn't have an offense.
No.
And ULM at least has some athletes. I'm going to go ULM.
Well, the fans go with you 71%, and I go with you as well. It's just too much to not enough. The Texas State defense, let's talk about it for a sec. They're great. They're good. It's probably one of the top better defenses in the conference. But they have the opposite problem of Troy. If you don't have a way to score and your defense will eventually not be able to hold the other team.
Mm-hmm.
So ULM is going to run away with this one in the second half. Probably a ton of points in the third quarter, and then the fourth quarter just sitting Caleb Evans.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. Those are our games of the week. Almost done. We got one more thing.
We got a final word.
Final word.
So final word. Obviously, the talk this week has been what's happened in California with collegiate players being paid. That California passed a law. A lot of people are talking about the governor signed the law. Well, yeah, he does sign the law, but they were like, oh, the governor was the reason why. No, this law was passed 72-0 in their house. This was a unanimous. This wasn't just the governor that was the reason why this law got passed. Yes, he signs it into law, but no, it wasn't just him. This was the state representatives coming together and deciding at a unanimous vote that this is something that needs to happen. And to be honest with you, this is going to start happening all over the country. This law, just in case you guys don't understand it, this law, one, doesn't go into effect till 2023. This is not going into effect in 2 months. This is not going into effect next year. You got 4 years before this happens. So unfortunately for all you guys that are in college right now, probably not going to be able to get any money off of this thing unless you do the you know, fifth year route, whatever that is. But no, just it doesn't, this law isn't saying schools can pay the players. This law is saying athletes can make money off of their likeness by either hiring an agent or getting an endorsement deal, not through the school, through the company and the individual themselves. That is all this law is saying. It's still, it doesn't mess up with Title IX because Title IX has some remedies in there about likeness and getting some sort of payment for that, but it doesn't mess around with that. That's what this law was passed in California. That's what Pennsylvania, New York, Florida, and like two or three other states have started writing kind of the same stuff up. And this is all due to the effect of the NCAA just sitting back and not doing anything. That's literally what this is about. The NCAA has basically just said, well, we're making all the money right now. Why are we gonna mess that up? Why would any businessman say that? Okay, yeah, we're gonna give you an option to make money. No, that's not how capitalistic markets work. They're gonna make the money. They aren't gonna let anybody else make money. That's as simple as that. So what states have done is said, all you are is a governing body. That's all the NCAA is. That's what people need to understand. They are the governing body of the FBS. That is all they are. So states said, okay, fine. We'll just make legislation that'll let the kids do it. You can't overrule our legislation. So, and the other good thing that's happened is there's been a congressman or a representative at, I think, state of Ohio that has come said, and there needs to be a national law that just is a sweeping law. Doesn't matter what state you're in. It's national law. So this is what I think. I have no problem with it. If you would have asked me this question about athletes being paid, we could do a whole show on this. But if you would have asked me about athletes getting paid 8 years ago, I would have said, nope, it's going to ruin college football. It's going to ruin all the sports. It takes amateurism out. That's a crap answer. That's a crap answer. The NFL is still one of the most watched things on television. You still watch the NFL, right? Those guys are making money, right? It's still exciting to watch, right? What's the difference? There is no difference. Like, you are still going to watch them play. The players are still going to play their butts off no matter what. So that little, take him. No, that doesn't work. I mean, that's just a cop-out of an answer. These kids are, yeah, they're on full ride. Okay, no, they aren't on full ride. Their scholarship gets renewed every year. It is not a four-year scholarship. Nobody hands out four-year scholarships anymore. They are year-by-year basis. That's what they are. Yes, they pay. It pays for a lot. But I can find you 1,000 kids that aren't doing anything, that are sleeping until 12, 1 p.m. in the afternoon and doing nothing, going to a class for 1 hour, and then coming back and playing video games for the rest of the day. Go look at the life of a college athlete these days, whether it's a golfer, whether it's a softball player, whether it's a football player or a basketball player. They're up generally at 5 a.m. in the morning, and their days don't end until 9 p.m. at night, whether it's they're doing homework or anything like that. You tell me a time where a guy can go and make any sort of money that he can put in his pocket. You can't. Like, it just doesn't happen. And so these kids, there's teams, there's schools, there's companies, there's the NCAA that makes millions, sometimes billions of dollars off of these kids for them playing a sport. They should be able to get paid. Now, the only problem that I have with this is that when I was reading about it is the endorsement deals and the opportunities that kids are going to get. And this is where the only problem that I think comes in with this law is that you're going to have kids that go to big schools like Ohio State, like UCLA, like USC, like Florida State. Guess what's the difference between those schools and schools like Troy, South Alabama, ULM, Texas State? Who gets put on the national television scene? Who gets put in more households as a person? Obviously the bigger schools. You see Ohio State on TV every week and they're playing. When it comes to football, how many times have you watched a golf match? Not that much. How many times have you watched a collegiate bowling tournament? Never. Those kids aren't, like, that's the question is, how much money are those kids going to be able to make off of endorsements when endorsement deals are all about TV deals right about now? All about advertising. How much are you the person at Troy? If you're a baseball player at Troy, how much money do you think a baseball player is going to bring Nike? Not that much. How much money do you think Justin Fields, if he got an endorsement deal, would bring at Ohio State right now? A lot. And so that's where I have a problem with the rule or with this law is what is it? How are the companies, and they're private companies, they can do whatever they want, but how there's going to be some sort of teeter-totter in the bigger schools compared to the smaller schools. So that's the only, and there's going to be more problems that come out of this, but I think there needs to be some sort of payment for these players. I'm not saying the best idea I heard was that put in an escrow account. If you start your freshman year, you start making endorsement deals, put it in an escrow account. Go get your degree, graduate, and then boom, there's all that money just sitting there waiting for you. If you don't go pro, so there's just a lot of things. It's always been a debated topic, but that's my views on it. I don't have a problem with kids making money off their likeness, especially if the schools are gonna if they're doing as much as what they're doing.
And I think at the end of the day, for all of these public schools, the state and inevitably the federal government will have the final say. So there's a bit of regulation that could come in with the federal and state laws that are passed, mm-hmm. like you suggested, like you said, that were made. So maybe there are other possibilities. There are other regulatory laws that could be passed, mm-hmm. and keeping these things in check. Also worth mentioning is the guy from UCF, the kicker who had a football or a YouTube account.
I had to get rid of it.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. That's the kind of thing that this.
There was no affiliation with UCF. It was literally him. He had already had it.
And
he had to shut it down.
He wasn't making over the money of the fact that he was the kicker at UCF.
No.
So this is the kind of thing that it frees up. And if let's say that there's a Troy student or Troy athlete that becomes famous on YouTube or Twitter or something, mm-hmm. and gets endorsement deals from other like Twitch or something.
Yeah.
That's the very thing that this would allow, and I support that wholeheartedly.
Oh yeah.
So for right now, students aren't getting paid.
Nope.
And we said at the beginning of the show, we aren't getting paid for this either.
We aren't getting paid.
So if you'd like to send us a few bucks, that's fine. If not, it's cool too. I get it. But the point is, hit that subscribe button wherever you are. If you're on Anchor, hit the subscribe button, and you could throw a couple dollars in our rainy day fund. It pays for just basically making sure that this podcast happens, and for all the fun stuff that we get to do on the side with it. So go ahead and follow us on Twitter at the OG Bench Boys. Wherever you're listening to us, whether it be iHeartRadio, Spotify, Luminary, Breakcast, Google Play.
Are we on Podbean yet?
We're not on Podbean yet. I'm working on it, but we're all over the place. I'm Thomas Gleaton.
I'm Colin Cahill.
And we're the Bench Boys. You got anything else?
Nope. It's been a long day, and we've got some football probably tonight if you're listening, and still got some good football this weekend.
So. If you're at the South Alabama game, I will be there at some point, somewhere. So.
Say hi.
Yeah, if you see me, say hi. Tell me to cut my hair or something. Mm. I don't know.
Something. Well, that's going to do it. So, as usual, just come on back.